Welcome to Days in the Wild. I just want to talk to you real quick before we jump into this next episode. I can't urge you enough to get out there and give us a review on iTunes or the Podbean app. It's super important. Helps me keep this free, helps me reach new people and continue to grow. If you don't know how to do that, hit me up and I'll help you through it. Also want you to go and give Phoenix Shooting Bags a look. Check out their website, phoenixshootingbags.com. They are our main sponsor and they put an excellent product out, and it means a lot for me for you to go check them out and take a look and see what they got. So without further ado, let's roll into this next episode. Welcome to Days in the Wild, big game hunting podcast. We are going to have a little conversation about my trip to Argentina and how my wife and I and cousin Paul and his wife and Charles and his wife got stuck over there, and got my buddy Ron Nixon with us, and he's been waiting to hear the story, so we decided to do a podcast about it.
We did a little role reversal. I get to ask the question.
So, what's new, Ron?
Not much, man. How about you? You're home. That's a good thing.
Yeah. I'm excited to be back.
That was an arduous process. We'll get to that in a little bit. Talk to me about Red Stag, honey, man. It's one of those things, you know, I run the Broadhead Nation Facebook page. Anytime you put up a question of the day where people talk about, you know, what's a dream hunt? What's a bucket list hunt? One that everybody always comes up with is, you know, Red Stag, and obviously you and I both know, and now more people will know. There's some fantastic Red Stag hunting down South America, Argentina. So where did the idea of Argentina come there versus New Zealand? How did this all start, man?
Well, you know, I like you just said, like most people, I looked into it, and New Zealand seemed like the place to go at first. And the more I looked into it, I was like, Red Stag have been in Argentina longer. They've been there since the 1800s. So it's more of an established, almost a native herd at this point. You know what I'm saying? It's
right,
not.
Right.
That was one of the things. The other thing was cost factor.
Oh, sure.
Go to South America. The flights there are cheaper. The hunts are cheaper. Getting stuff back probably is cheaper. Like, everything about it's cheaper.
Yeah, flights are probably quicker still.
New Zealand,
talking 13, 16 hours in an airplane, probably not even anywhere near that going down to Argentina.
Well, I mean, flying from AZ, you have to have there's no direct flight. So you have to fly to Dallas is about the best, I guess. So we flew out of Dallas. You fly to Dallas, and then it's a 9-hour flight from Dallas to Buenos Aires.
Then how far was your flight? Buenos Aires. So that's, I guess that's the part that a lot of people didn't understand, was that you couldn't just, you know, pick up and run to the airport and go. You were inland. You were several hundred miles. I want to say almost 300-400 miles inland where you were hunting. How far was it from Buenos Aires into where you were?
Well, in normal situation, normal driving conditions is about 8.5-hour drive. So we actually flew, there's a commuter plane that flies to Santa Rosa, and Santa Rosa is about an hour and a half from where we were hunting.
Okay.
So we, you know, Santa Rosa wasn't an option for us to fly back.
Sure.
Anyway, but
we'll get to that. Yeah.
Yeah. So all in all, just going to South America seemed like a financially doable option for me. And, you know, when I started really looking into this stuff like 10 years ago, it's what I fell on. I knew I wanted to do it in Argentina versus New Zealand.
So this is a trip that was 10 years in the plan.
Basically, yeah. I mean, I've been thinking about doing Red Stag for almost 15, but 10 years ago, I started really researching and figuring out how I wanted to, you know, where I wanted to go and so on and so forth. And then about 5 years ago at the SEI show, I met Nico Catania, when he is the owner of the outfit that I end up hunting with. I met him, talked to him a little bit. You know, he told me about his free range, and then he told me about the preserve, which is a high fence, and, you know, what the acreage was, what the type of hunting, and so on and so on. I liked what he had to say, and, you know, so I was interested in all of that, and I end up hooking him up with a client of mine, and I helped them book with him, and they went down there and they had a fantastic time. It was about 5 years ago.
You sent people down ahead. So you kind of got a preview from a client.
Right, exactly.
Awesome.
So, and I was like, all right, well, you know, they had a great time. They shot awesome animals. The food was great, blah, blah, blah. So I had been in contact with Nico and so on and so forth. And he wanted me to become an agent for him. And so I did. I became an agent for him. And I said, you know, I'm like, I'm not really going to actively send a lot of people down to you until I get to come down there and hunt for myself.
Sure.
And, you know, I have my friends, or my client anyway, I have their testimonial, but you know, it's not the same as firsthand. And when I send people to go hunting, I want to have firsthand experience with that outfitter or whatever. Anyway, so I told him, said, I'm going to be turning 40 and my wife wants to give me a birthday, you know, a substantial birthday present for my 40th. And this is something we want to do. So I started planning my first trip down there. This was 4 years ago. And, you know, I made a deposit, blah, blah, blah. Then we had some shit happen with my pool business and whatever. We kind of hit a little rough patch financially. And I didn't want to spend the money to go down there. Oh, excuse me. I'm going to get ahead of myself.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself.
You had a kid right in there.
I had, on my 40th, well, my wife, we started planning the thing. And then my wife got pregnant. And then, so for my 40th birthday, my son was born 2 days before my 40th birthday. So that's why I did not go the first year.
Right.
The second year we went down there, or we were going to go down there, and the financial thing happened.
Sure.
So, and then it just kept seeming like it wasn't the right time. It wasn't the right time. We kept pushing things off. I had to remodel my house because I had a little bit of a flood and this and that. So one thing led to another. 4 years later, I'm finally able to go. Able to take my 40th birthday present, my 40th birthday trip, 4 years later.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm all paid up. You know, I paid for basically for two animals, and my wife was getting a black buck, and the coronavirus hits, you know.
Right.
But when we were getting ready to leave, this was beginning of March.
It's so crazy, you know, you put things off year after year after year, and you finally think, perfect time. I have a plan. It's going to work out. And then this happened.
Right. Exactly. We were getting ready to leave, and, you know, coronavirus wasn't really a real thing at this point here in the United States. Definitely not in Arizona, it wasn't.
Sure.
You know,
not even.
We were in a state that had like two cases at the time,
right,
and we were flying to a country that had zero cases.
Right.
So, you know, we looked at the risks and everything else, and it just seemed like if you took the proper precautions and you wore masks and you do this and you do that. And so, you know, we took all this, we brought wipes with us to wipe down our chairs in the airplane. I was putting colloidal silver gel up my nose. I was doing a bunch of stuff, you know, constantly washing hands and doing this and doing that and following all these procedures to keep yourself safe. I figured, hey, if we keep ourselves safe, we should be okay. Plus, we're going to a country that doesn't have it, and we're not going to be in a city. We're going to be out in the middle of nowhere.
Right. Be out in the country where there's less chance of running into people. Who cares?
Right. So, you know, in my eyes and all of our collective eyes, we're like, well, it's not that big a risk. I never even thought about the travel implications or anything shutting down, or because nobody was doing that.
Right.
Nobody in the United States was doing that. Not even the hot states like New York and Florida and whatever. So, you know, we're like, all right, let's go. Let's do it. So the trip was planned like this. We were going to go because we were going with our wives. They wanted to do a little bit of wine country. And because wine country in Argentina required an 8-hour drive, we decided, hey, let's fly to Chile. We'll do wine country, and then we'll fly from Chile to Santa Rosa.
Okay.
Right? So that just made more sense.
Sure.
And broke up the trip a little bit.
Get the girls happy. Happy wife, happy life. I get
exactly.
It. Yeah.
So we go catch our flight to Chile, and the flight from Arizona to Dallas is delayed.
First bed home.
Yeah. So it's delayed. And I'm like, fucking cool, you know? And it looks like we're going to make it. But then we end up sitting on the tarmac and this and that. We get there basically just 10 minutes before our flight from Dallas to Chile is taking off. So we missed that flight.
Right.
But Charles and his wife, Charles Whitwam, and Jillian is her name, and they flew from San Francisco to Dallas, and they got there earlier than we did, a couple hours earlier than we did, and we were going to meet in Dallas and then fly together to Chile. So they end up going to Chile without us. We had to spend the night in Dallas. So this was the first, like, indication of, you know, shit wasn't going to go our way.
We should rent a car and drive home right now.
You know what? It crossed my mind for a second. Like, is this a sign? Maybe should we not be doing this?
No kidding.
You know, like, it crossed my mind. I'm not going to lie.
Next time God gives you a sign like that, just rent the car.
So we finally get on our flight. We meet them in Chile. And we're freaking exhausted.
Right.
I didn't sleep for crap on the plane.
Never do.
And we get to Chile, and that we get picked up by this, our tour company, to go to this vineyard. And it's a 2.5 hour drive to the vineyard from where we're staying. We get in this hot ass van, barely any air conditioning. I don't know, I think it was just a fan that was blowing, but it's hot down there. They're just coming out of summer season.
Yeah, they're coming into their fall.
Right. And we get on this highway and we're driving an hour. We get about an hour and a half into it and we hit bumper to bumper traffic. And it's like, okay, what's going on? What's going on? So we're sitting in this traffic for about a half an hour. We finally get to there was a police car on the side. That's what it was. And our tour guide asks him, you know, what's going on? He said, oh, there's a rollover accident 6 miles ahead. A container truck flipped over and crashed and crushed 4 cars.
Holy hell.
So it's like 4 deaths. So the highway's closed. So we finally get to the next exit after, you know, bumper to bumper for a little bit while longer, get off. And we drive all the way back to the city because we weren't going to, there's no other way to get there.
Sure.
It's the only pass through the mountains or whatever. So we get back to the city. So we pretty much lost the whole first day. At this time, we're just like, we'll just hang out. We'll go for a walk around the city. In the meantime, what's going on right now in the city?
In the actual country of Chile.
Right, in the whole country of Chile, but especially in the capital city of Santiago, there's a revolution going on.
Yeah.
It's social, they're calling it social unrest, but it's a revolution.
People killing each other in the streets is a little more than social unrest.
You know what? I don't think it's not violent. It's not violent. I'll give it. I was never fearful of my life in any way. Santiago is one of the safest cities. It is the safest city in South America. I don't know how much that's saying, but it's a very safe place to go to because none of the people are armed. You're not even allowed to carry a pocket knife.
Wow. So
the only people who have weapons are the police. You know, there might be some makeshift stuff.
Sure.
But, you know, it's mostly just like protesting and starting little bonfires in the street, stuff like that. I got some video that I'll send it to you. It's pretty, pretty crazy. Anyway, so that night we want to go out to eat. And there's a restaurant that was recommended to us like 2 blocks, 5 minute walk from the hotel. And we start walking there and all of a sudden it's like a riot breaks out. The cops bust out tear gas and they're tear gassing everybody. So we inadvertently got tear gassed.
Found yourself on the wrong side of the riot line, apparently.
Yeah, pretty much. And that's kind of what started started making the trip kind of miserable because I have really bad allergies. And that tear gas, even though, you know, everybody else was affected by it, like, you know, momentarily, it sent me into this like allergic response. I got all snot faced and my ears got all clogged. So I lost all my hearing for 5 days. I couldn't hear shit. I was like, huh? Anytime anybody talked to me. Anyway,
made for a fun time through wine country.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the next day, we only had one more day. We were only supposed to be there for 3 days. So the next day, we finally make it out to a vineyard. We have a nice time, eat a nice meal, and the day goes by fine. And then again that night, more rioting. We're out to dinner, and they're tear gassing. We're on the second floor at this restaurant, and the tear gas like rose up, and everybody in the restaurant starts coughing and sneezing and whatever. And now it's like, now I'm worried that they're going to detain me at the airport and think I got coronavirus because I'm like really just not faced up. I'm sneezing like crazy and coughing and whatever. So I look like I got coronavirus at this point. We get up the next day and we go catch our flight and we fly to Buenos Aires without a hitch, thank God. We get to Buenos and our flight from Buenos to Santa Rosa is delayed. I'm like, oh God, Jesus, another fucking delay. And
just a nightmare.
But they didn't detain me, so that was good. I'll take that as a positive. We finally get to Santa Rosa. The guides are there to pick us up. They pick us up. We get back to the ranch. It's like 1:35, something like that, 1:40 in the morning.
2 o'clock in the morning, you're kidding me, right?
Yeah, they had some snacks for. We were starving. I hadn't eaten since like 7.
All right, hurry up, get to bed. You're getting up in 3 hours to go hunting.
Exactly. Well, that's exactly what happened. So we ate, went to bed, whatever. We laid down for I got up at 6, went to bed at like 2:15, got up at 6, took a shower or whatever, got myself together, pulled my bow out. I hadn't done any of that yet. You know, I haven't even looked at my bow now since I left home, and I already had been traveling for 4 days. Yeah,
hope the damn thing's sighted in still.
Exactly. So I get it, run out to the back. He had a target set up, shot it a couple times. It was good. So we left the ranch a little late that morning, like 7:30. Sun had been up for an hour or whatever. And first morning, I actually got on a nice stag. Like, it was foggy, super foggy. It had rained that night. And we heard a stag roaring in the distance, and we kept closing the distance, and got on him, and he was just
too
big.
Something else to hear, isn't it, I guess?
What's that?
Hearing that roar, that's something else, isn't it?
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, yeah, if you like elk hunting, you'll right. love that stag hunting.
Yeah, I missed out when I was in Australia last year. I missed out on the roar by about 3 weeks. They had a late roar that year.
Oh, okay.
And they stopped roaring end of May, early June, and then I showed up about 3 weeks later. The outfitter was like, "Oh, I was hoping you'd get here quicker, mate. They were still roaring in early June. We never have it." So, oh God, it was horrible. But yeah, I understand that's something else here.
Yeah, no, but it was cool. So, you know, we slip in on this one stag, and I get close enough, and I'm like 25 yards, and he pulls his head out of the brush, and he's just a giant. So I can't shoot him, you know, because I can't afford to shoot a giant.
I can't assume. Yeah, 400-incher. Yeah, no, I didn't bring that. Yeah.
So, you know, it went like that for most of the morning. And then about 11 a.m., we're glassing, and I spot this stag feeding in the brush on this hillside. It's not very hilly there. It's pretty flat. You know, we did a lot of walking, probably 10 miles per day. I think my phone was telling me I averaged about 9 miles a day. But it was all flat. It was mostly flat walking and sure. not a whole lot of ridge. And the brush is super thick and all about 4 or 5 foot tall. So glassing is kind of hard to do there. It's not your typical... Can't go there with a tripod. I actually had a tripod with me, and I after that first morning, I just left it back at the ranch and never used it again. But I was glassing offhand, and I saw this stag in the brush, and I couldn't tell what he was. And so the guy's like, let's go up, you know, get closer and get a closer look. And we get closer, and we tell it something that I could shoot. You know, I had a certain age class and a certain trophy class that I can shoot.
Right.
And this was at the top end of what I could shoot, which was awesome. You know, I snuck in, I probably made the stalk of my life on this thing. And I was so beat and so tired and just not there, but yet I still made it happen. I was so like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to get this done on the first day.
Right.
I get my stag out of the way. I get in, I make it to 30 yards, he's quartering away, and I draw back, the wind's perfect, everything's perfect. He gives me the look that I want, I shoot, and I freaking hit him square in the shoulder.
Right in the shoulder blade.
Right in the shoulder blade.
That's a thick shoulder blade, by the way.
It is. Contrary to what people believe,
yeah.
or may think, I should say, is that red stag was told by a biologist down there that their bone structure is more dense than an elk.
Yep.
And because their rib cages are more closely compacted, like their ribs are closer together than most North American animals, like your, you know, deer and elk and even moose, that penetration is usually an issue with archery equipment.
Yeah.
I kind of wish I knew this because I went down there with my deer setup. I didn't go down there even with an elk setup, to be honest with you.
And that's the same thing I experienced on my first arrow in about 4.5 inches.
Yeah. So anyway, I shot him in the shoulder quartering, which was weird. So like, I don't know how I caught it the way I caught it, but I caught it that way. It didn't get a whole lot of penetration. The arrow fell out like after he ran like 50 yards and we looked for him for the whole rest of the day. Couldn't find him. Barely found any blood, nothing. Right now, I'm just fucking deflated. I'm just like, I can't believe this shit. After all the crap we just went through, I just shot, you know, a stag. I still have another animal I could shoot. So instead of shooting, I was going to shoot either a fallow deer or an axis deer. I decided to shoot another stag. So.
Oh, because anyway. They considered draw blood, that was a kill.
Yeah, once you draw blood, you're done.
Oh, God, that's brutal.
So I'm like, you know, just leave it to me, you know. Anyway, so I'm just like, I'm fucked in my head right now. I'm just like, yeah. I can't. this is happening, blah, blah, blah. I waited all this time. So I'm like, all right, well, I got another crack at it. It's already paid for. I got another crack at it. I'm going to kill a stag. But beforehand, I'm going to concentrate on my wife. I'm going to let her shoot her buck because she had a black buck.
Right.
So let's get her a black buck. And then once that's out of the way, I'll have gotten out. You know, I'll have gotten the jet lag out. I will have gotten used to being, you know, here and blah, blah, blah. I'll practice in the middle of the day shooting. I'll get my mojo back and we'll be all right. Right.
Get a little rest for the love of God too. Jeez.
Here's the other thing too. I also had the option to continue hunting that same animal, looking for him.
Okay.
So I did that for 3 days, kept looking for hunting for him and, or excuse me, for 2 days. I kept hunting for him for 2 days. And the second day, my wife, we saw a black buck. She made an amazing stalk, crawled on her hands and knees for like 200 yards.
Wow.
And she shot him at like 90 yards with a rifle. She didn't bring the bow because, you know, she wasn't well practiced enough and she didn't feel confident to take the bow. So shot with a rifle, one shot, dropped him, super happy. So now we're, you know, we're all happy and whatever. And we go out the next morning, find a group of stags, crawl in, just can't make it happen. So we're coming up out of this bottom and I'm like, I stopped just to glass the, it was kind of like a rise in front of us, just a glass this rise in front of us. And I spot a stag bedded. And in my head, I had envisioned two things. I envisioned either calling one in or finding one bedded and stalking it like a mule deer, you know?
Okay.
And I'm like, all right, here's this stag bedded. I'm like, perfect opportunity. Again, he was on the upper end of what I had paid to shoot.
Right.
And anyway, 3 hours later, I find myself in position. I'm 60 yards from him, bedded. And I radio back to my cousin, Paul. His wife and my wife were all with us this particular morning. We all decided to hunt together for some reason. I don't remember what the reason was, but we decided to hunt together. And I radioed to him. I said, here, keep an eye on him. Oh, no, I didn't radio to him. I was hand signaling to him because he couldn't understand what the hell I was saying. And I was, sorry, it was a month long we were there. It's a lot for me to remember. So I hand signaled
to him. He's trying to hand signal to you in Spanish and you couldn't understand it. I got it.
I'm trying to signal to him to let me know if he stands up because I'm going to be crawling through the grass, basically, to get to another brush where I'll have a better shooting lanes if he gets up. So I start crawling over and he finally understands me after 5 minutes of me trying to, you know, do my gestures and look like a freaking crazy guy in sign language.
Yeah, a crazy camouflage mime out in the middle of South America. So
exactly. So I finally get to the spot and I look back to where he was and he's not there. And I look back at my cousin and he's like, you know, trying to gesture me. He's up. So, and I finally see where he's at because he's behind this group of, and I'm just ranging and he'd come into an opening and he'd stop. And now, because I've already wounded one, I'm being extra, extra careful, you know, like I'm not freaking screwing up another one. Right. So I range him and then I'd come to full draw and he would turn or whatever. And I couldn't get a shot. He did this about 9 times. And finally, like I said to myself, I'm like, come on, man, you shoot coyotes on the freaking run. Guessing, you know, if you're off 4 yards, 5 yards, this is a stag, you know,
right.
You're not missing them. You're going to put it right where you need to. So I saw him kind of heading towards this tree. I ranged that tree up. You know, I added a few yards because I guesstimated about how far behind he was going to come out. And I came to full draw and he steps out and I let one go at 50 yards, heart punch him, right?
Nice.
He runs, stops behind this group of cluster of, they're like mesquite trees like here, but they're denser and longer around. And
like thorns or something.
But they're mesquite. Yeah. They're a type of mesquite.
Oh, they are. Okay.
Yeah. And but vegetation is very much like desert here.
And the stag just stands there.
He's just standing there and he's wobbling, like, you know, I'm like, okay, he's gonna go down. And I'm like,
so tough. No one knows how tough they are.
Like, he's not going down, man. I'm like, if he steps out, I'm gonna put another one on him. So I loaded another arrow. Well, actually I already had loaded another arrow. I range him up, he's at 70, and he takes one step forward. As soon as I see that spot, this is the opposite side now. 70 yards, put another one on the opposite side of him.
Jeez.
And this one was double lungs, but it was a good shot. He runs about, or I wouldn't say runs. He kind of trots for a couple seconds and then stops at, like, I don't know. I want to say it was probably about 90 yards at this point.
Right.
And And he's just standing there. He's got his head down. He can't keep his head up. He's, you know, his blood coming out of his mouth. And I'm like, you know, I'm like, screw this shit. I already lost one. I ain't losing another one. You know what I'm saying?
Why isn't this thing going down?
So I, you know, he's looking away from me. So I kind of race up to this group of bushes that are, you know, about 30 yards ahead of me. And I get to those bushes and he's at 59 yards. And I got a shot through a V in the tree. Like there's a bigger mesquite tree and there's a, like two trunks that make a V, and I got him quartered away right through those trees. And I'm like, well, like, I don't care what their shot's like. I just want to put another one in them. Well,
right.
Shoot him again. Boom. Hit him again. Perfect shot. Now, like I'm one of those guys, I don't get buck fever until after the fact. Now the buck fever sets in.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to like tremble a little bit.
Right.
But I already got three arrows in him and he's just standing there. He didn't move after that third shot. He just standing there. I'm like, he's not fucking going down.
No one believes me when I said I had to put four arrows in my stag nostril.
I load another one.
Yep.
I load another one, shoot another one. Same side, quarter away, a little bit further back this time because I'm shaking like a leaf.
Right.
Now he takes five, because now this, I think this one kind of hit him paunchish, you know.
Right.
And he steps forward like 5 yards and finally falls down. And I'm like, oh my God, man, that's crazy. I was just like, I could not believe. I almost started crying at that point. I was like.
Let me ask you this, John. Your last archery elk, how many arrows?
What's that?
Last archery elk you shot, how many arrows?
One arrow, 83 yards.
Yeah. And then the elk before that, I bet you maybe one, maybe two at the most.
I've never shot an elk more than once.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I've killed four with my bow and two with the rifle.
No one believes me when I say those animals are so tough, those stags.
I say four. That's four bulls. I've killed three cows also with archery equipment. You know, it's a 450-pound, 500-pound
stag.
You know, yeah. It's not. They're not small. But they're not as big as an elk by any means.
Yeah, bigger than a mule deer, smaller than an elk.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I've literally never shot an elk more than once.
Yeah.
So I get that stag. And so now I'm all happy. At least I got one. Maria's got the black buck.
Too bad you couldn't convince your outfitter that was the same one you shot 3 days prior.
Yeah. Believe me, that the thought went through my mind a few times.
Oh, look, there's the arrow wound from a couple days ago.
Oh, man. So the next morning or next day, I decided to go out hunting with Charles.
Right.
Because he's having a hell of a time, mainly because he has a little bit of a communication issue going on with his guide. His guide doesn't speak English.
Okay.
And, you know, so he wants a zig when the guide wants a zag. That was the main issue going on there. But so I go with him, and that evening comes around and the roar just kicks in hard that afternoon, and they're just going off everywhere. It was myself, Charles, Jillian, and Gonzalo was the guide.
Right.
And we just kind of like, we're going from like bush to bush, just moving around like a pack of wolves. Like it was just like perfect. Like we were like super in sync, you know, and we hear this group fighting and we know it's a group because it sounds like three different roars going on.
Right.
And we know for sure it's two because we heard, you know, some sparring going on and whatnot. We kind of slip in there. It's real thick. Get to the spot and we finally get eyes on them. You know, we're crawling around on our hands and knees for like at least an hour, finally get into position. This stag's feeding and it's feeding in our direction. So we kind of make another little movement so we can get to a shooting lane. I'm videoing him. He's got his GoPro going. He's got a 360 camera going. Like everything's falling into place. And he steps out 14 yards and
jeez.
And yeah, he just smoked him 14 yards, runs maybe 30 yards and dies. And well, actually, no, he falls. He runs like 30, 40 yards, falls, gets back up again. Charles put another one in him, then he dies.
second arrow.
Yeah, the second arrow. Now his was a pass through. I mean, he was 14 yards and he was shooting a 500. He was shooting my 560 grain Valkyrie setup.
Oh wow!
And he shot that. You know, he shoots. I think his bow's like 73 pounds or something like that. But so you know, and at 14 yards with that fixed blade and all that stuff, it went through.
That's gonna come pretty good.
Yeah, he just hit him a little high lung, I think, the first one. But he was dead. He was done. So, you know, now we're all super happy. We're taking pictures and out of nowhere, here comes one of the guys in a pickup truck with my wife, Paul, Jen, and they're all in street clothes because they didn't come out hunting that evening.
Right. All of a sudden, everybody's coming out of here. What the heck?
Everybody's coming out here, and I'm like, what's going on? The police are at the ranch, and they want to quarantine us. I'm like, what? Yeah, the police are at the ranch. They want to quarantine us. So Nico told us to get in the trucks and go, you know? So we're trying to avoid them, basically.
Right.
And so we're hang out there till like dark or whatever, and we get back, and you know, the police had left and whatnot. But they told Nico, they're like, listen, we know these people are here, and we're going to be back at noon tomorrow. So there was kind of no avoiding it, unless we left that night, which
you probably thought about.
Had I known what was going on and what was going to, how it was all going to unfold.
Yeah, what was about to transpire, yeah.
We would have just got our happy asses in a, you know, in a truck and drove to Buenos Aires that night, hopped up flight and got the fuck out, you know?
Right.
But so we didn't know. And it's funny because I have a podcast that we did that night or the next night, excuse me, a podcast we did the next night with all of us sitting at the table that I'm going to air probably right after this. And you'll see how lighthearted we are still at this point, because this is before the shit hit the fan.
Did you guys talk cops coming tomorrow?
So this was after the cops came. So this was that night anyway. Okay. But so the next morning we go out. And I was just, again, going back looking for that other stag, you know, just an excuse to go out hunting.
Sure, sure.
And I could fox hunt and pig hunt and all that stuff, too. So there was other opportunities out there, which I did actually end up shooting a fox.
Cool.
And just for sport, I was stalking. Like if I saw a really good axis deer, a really good fallow deer, whatever, I was just stalking, just getting practice, you know, slipping in. I got to 10 yards on two fallow deer and about 15 yards on a big axis buck.
Wow.
I also stalked a couple of black bucks because they were the hardest because they were in the wide open and find the spot to get, you know. So I was just doing that, just getting a bunch of practice and having fun, you know, killing them in my head.
Sure. Writing imaginary checks.
Exactly. So anyway, so the next day or there, that day at noon, the cops show up and they make us sign this thing that says basically if we skip quarantine, we could face 6 to 10 years in jail, blah, blah, blah. Now we're like, oh, fuck, what the hell, you know? And still at this point, we don't really, the gravity of it all, it hasn't really set in because at this point, just right now, we have to stay till the 24th.
Jeez.
Okay, that's the way it read. We just have to stay till the 24th. So we're like, oh, okay, whatever. We were here to the 17th the 17th or the 18th. I can remember now what it was. Anyway, what's another few days? We're just extending our vacation. Okay, big fucking deal. We're extending the vacation. I can use an extended vacation.
Sure.
You know, so we called. We got our flights changed.
Those 7-8 days weren't cheap, though.
No, they're not. You know, but I was like, whatever. And I'm like, whatever. It gives me more time to find this other thing, you know, the other stag, blah, blah, blah. So now Nico comes up to me. He's like, listen, hey, you guys are going to be here for X amount of time. You can either pay X amount of money per night, or you can keep on hunting. And this is what I'm going to do for you. So he made us all an offer we couldn't refuse.
Okay.
Basically, we all got to shoot. Well, I don't know exactly what, but just to give you an idea, he allowed me to shoot a second stag for $1,500.
That's cheap.
Right? Okay. So I'm like, I know I'm spending a lot of money already, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But, you know, I didn't come here and spend all this money already and come all this way, you know, to go home. And he said $1,500 I could shoot anything.
Wow.
It wasn't just a stag. So I was like, but at this point, now stags were in my skin. I wanted to shoot another stag. I couldn't give two shits about fallow deer, axis deer, whatever. Nothing else excited me on the place because I had it in for the stags now. So, and what I did was, because I really didn't want to spend another $1,500, but I figured, hey, if I'm out there hunting, whether I get one or I don't, at least I'm out there hunting, I'm doing stuff, you know, because we only had Wi-Fi service in the middle of the day.
Right.
So I'd come back after the morning hunt. We're 4 hours ahead of Arizona. I'd come back. I'd try to conduct whatever business I could with the limited service that I had. I mean, it was that was the most frustrating part of all of it, really, was I couldn't communicate with anybody. And I had set up all these things that I thought worked fine when I was in the city. But then when I was out there, like I couldn't do Wi-Fi calling. So if you didn't have WhatsApp or if I wasn't connected with you on Facebook or through Skype or whatever, I couldn't communicate with you.
Yeah, they probably use the satellite internet for their Wi-Fi, and that's exactly. Just sketchy at best. Yeah,
it was satellite internet. So anyhow, you know, I'm trying to talk mostly about the hunting stuff. There were so many like little knick-knacky things that like this, it was like, I described it to Charles like this. I said, like, I feel like I'm dying the death of a million cuts. You know, no one of these cuts, no one of these are serious.
Right.
But they just kept, you know, every little thing was just something like, you know, even getting eaten all over my hands with ants and whatever. Like I was starting to cry over spilled milk because like every little thing that happened was like, fuck, another thing, you know. And I'm not a really great storyteller, and I lose a lot of the details, but
like a chicken pecking you to death. One peck.
Yeah, it is. It's just, it's, I, if somebody could have seen it from the, I would have made a good movie anyway, but it
sounds like a great comedy. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Like a little bit of a dark comedy. So I was hunting and I find a nice stag, a silver stag, which was bigger than the ones that I was allowed to shoot previously. You know, I couldn't shoot, he said anything, but I couldn't shoot like, you know, $20,000 stag or anything. I couldn't go shoot a 460 inch stag or anything. Right. But so stalk him, and Charles is with me filming me, and I could see this stag's path of travel. He's roaring and he's moving up this like mesquite flat, and he's going to go up on these ridges. And I know because I heard some hinds behind us.
Right.
I know where he's going, and we could see it. And I'm like, I looked over to Franco. He's the guy that was like, we could cut this guy off. And he's like, yeah. He agreed with me. And we made this beeline to the spot. And sure as shit, here comes this freaking stag, and he's coming up. And Franco ripped a couple of roars himself. Comes in right to 25 yards. I draw back, I shoot, and he like ducked. Right? So I hit him high.
Oh, geez.
It's a pass through, not a pass through, but a through and through. So the arrow's still in him. Fletcher's on one side and arrow, you know, on, and broadhead on the side.
Yeah.
And he runs off and he's out there. Now he's out there like out in the antelope country now because he ran the other way and he ran out of the brush. And he's out in the flats and we're just kind of like shadowing him. And I'm like, I'm just like waiting for this thing to fall down. And I'm like, what the fuck? He ain't going down, man. And I'm like, Charles is like, I'm like, do you see blood on his snout? Like he's aspirating. He's like, yeah, I do. I'm like, so I'm like, oh, I, you know, I got lungs. I know I got lungs. I feel like I did, even though I hit him high. I just thought I hit him high lungs, you know?
Right.
Well, it's getting dark. And finally he kind of scoots around us and he gets up into that ridge and we lose him in that brush. And we're like, oh my, I'm like, I can't believe this shit, man. I talked myself into spending another $1,500
to lose him.
Talked myself into another $1,500 just so I could feel better about myself, feel better about this whole shit. And I go and fucking wound another animal. And I'm like, I cannot believe this shit, right?
It's horrible.
So next day comes, and I'm just like, we went and looked for him all morning long. Paul was done hunting at this point. Jen wasn't hunting. So Paul and Jen came with us. My wife was out there, whatever. So I'm like, I'm just like, fuck me, this sucks. Now all the shit starts happening. Flights start getting canceled. We've been in contact with we also find out that day that we're definitely there till the 25th. There's no way, no how we're getting out.
Yeah, no getting around it.
The embassy is telling us, get out as fast as you can any way possible. But they don't understand that we can't get from where we're at over there without going through checkpoints.
And you signed a document, right?
Yeah, we signed a document. And just we're trying everything. We're like, okay, what if we get Nico had some friends that had a private plane we could fly, you know, from the ranch to a ranch close by Buenos Aires. We started looking into everything. Now the commercial flights are canceling. So we kept booking flights and having them canceled. I booked like six different flights, all of them canceled. And they're not giving us back the money at this point.
No, it's so like, I'm here's the credit towards your next flight. Great.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like $8,000 in flights at this point.
As I say, the flight's probably $600-$700 per person each time.
Oh, no, way more than that. Like, $2,000.
Oh my God.
$2,000. Yeah. Like $1,800, $1,500.
For last minute fares. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I'm like, now we're all starting to freak out. Now shit's happening back home too that we can't control. We're fear for our children. And I'm and like, that's like number one on my list now. I'm like, oh my God, my mother-in-law's sick. I don't know if she's got coronavirus. She's the one that's watching my kids.
Right.
My parents are older, and like if she does have coronavirus and she's been around the kids, do I make my kids go with my mom and dad now and possibly freaking out? Well, it turns out, thank God, my mother-in-law did not have corona. She just had a sinus infection and whatever. It was came and gone in 2 days and it was fine. But or 3 days or whatever. So like we're stressing out about everything that's going on here and we're helpless. We can't do a damn thing. And like I should have broke this podcast up into all the crappy shit that happened to us and all the hunting, because it's hard to see, like, and it's hard to know day by day, but it's just one thing after another was happening, and we were trying to continue to hunt and do stuff like that more to keep our minds off of shit.
I was gonna say, did you find it hard to concentrate on the hunting, knowing what was going on?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. You're almost like out preoccupied, thinking, okay, stag. Oh, they cast another flight. Now, how am I gonna get home?
Out there, we had no communications at all.
Yeah, you're also running.
I didn't know. Every time I come back from hunting, I was like, okay, what happened now? You know, every other day, the police were coming to check to make sure we were still there.
Oh, so they're nanny state. They weren't just taking your word for it. They're checking
us. Oh, yeah, no, they were checking on us, man. They were checking on us hard.
And what were the ramifications? Just for clarification, if they caught you within that quarantine time outside of the ranch, trying to make a run for Buenos Aires, or trying to make a run for, you know, to catch a plane stateside, what was the ramifications?
Jail.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Jail time. So, you know, we kept thinking, that's what kept going. That was like what was going through our heads. Like, do we spend X amount of money and X amount of time here and just ride it out, or possibly get thrown in jail for 6 to 10 years?
And for the record, if you're thrown in jail for breaking a, you know, government document that you signed with that, then the U.S. Embassy doesn't even have any pull. They can't even do anything for you at that point.
Yeah. And honestly, at this point, the embassy really wasn't a whole lot of help.
Right.
It hadn't been help. And all the while, like, I know a lot of people. My cousins knows a lot of people.
Sure.
We were talking to so many influential people. I talked to congressmen, governors, and you know, representatives, and this and that. I mean, anybody that would listen, like.
Well, I mean, you reached out. I mean, I reached out to a friend of mine that works at the White House even for you. So.
Yeah, like you and Tony Cochera was helping me out. That's when we started looking into private flights at that point.
Sure.
You know, just to see what the options were, man. And I was floored. I was like, $150,000. That's crazy. I'm like, how, like, in my head, I guess I never looked at it. I never looked into it. I mean, I never wanted to fly. I mean, I wanted to fly private, I'm sure, but never thought about flying private. And, you know, you hear all these people like, oh yeah, I got a jet. I fly from here to there, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, you don't realize how much money it costs. Like a cheap jet costs like $5,000 an hour.
Yeah.
To operate. Like, and that's cost, like bare cost. Thing,
all the PGA golfers that fly from event to event.
Yeah, I mean, it's like crazy to me. Crazy.
Yeah.
So we started looking into it, and then there was a guy there with us that wasn't part of our group, but, you know, we became friends and everything. He's a guy from California.
Okay.
And he was like, yeah, let's just get a private jet. Let's just do it, man. I'm like, he's the only guy that had money between all of us. I mean, my cousin Paul is a doctor, and, you know, he does okay, but he's not rich. He looks right. Like he's rich a lot of times because he's got a nice house. But, you know, he busted his ass. That kid's been saving money since he's been working since he was like 15 years old and saving money since then. So I try not to take anything from him. He's, you know, but, you know, none of us can afford a $200,000 flight.
Exactly.
$1,000 flight, whatever. And I'm like,
even splitting it 4 and 5 and 6 ways.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But even split that, it's, you know, you say split that, you're like, oh, it's only whatever, but it's per person. And you're like, oh yeah, well, John's wife's not paying for her own way. So right. It's really, you know, it's really $40,000 for John, you know?
Right. But, meanwhile, you're watching, you know, you're getting canceled flight after canceled flight, watching your
credit. So I've already lost money. I've already spent money. Now I just lost another $1,500 because I wounded a fucking animal that I shouldn't have shot. Right. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening to me. This is like the worst. It's like a freaking nightmare.
When I get home.
It's a nightmare. And I'm just freaking out. I'm like, no matter what decision I make, it's the wrong decision. And all the while in the back of my head, I'm saying, John, just lay back. Let it all unfold. Let it all unfold. Let's see what happens. Let's see what happens. I got 5 or 6 people whispering in my ear back home saying, start a GoFundMe. My sister's like, I want to start a GoFundMe for you. No, I'm like, no. Let's just wait. Let's see what's going on. And, you know, the girls are all saying, we should start a GoFundMe. People start GoFundMe stupid shit all the time. And, you know, even if it's just a couple $1,000 to help us out, whatever, if we got to spend that much kind of money. And I'm like, all right, well, whatever. I don't know. Anyway, so David Rigo puts up one for us.
Yep.
David's a good friend of ours, and he puts up one for us. And simultaneously, my sister puts up one for us. It's the one that you shared for me and helped out. My sister put that up, and I was like, all right, let's let's start working this angle, because let's start thinking like we're getting out of here on a private plane, because everything else is closing. Because I mean, I was in contact with the embassy in Rio de Janeiro, because we were going to have to fly. We got a flight that we paid like $2,500 a person for, to go from Buenos. We had to take a private flight from Santa Rosa or a bus. And the buses were still running at that point.
Just to get to Rio de Janeiro?
No, just to get from La Pampa to Buenos Aires.
Right.
And then from Buenos Aires, we had to fly to Rio. No, sorry. Is it Rio? Yeah, Rio de Janeiro. And then Rio de Janeiro, we were going to fly to Florida.
Home. Sounds like an
awful lot. Finally get the okay from the embassy in Rio de Janeiro that they were not going to get detained over there. Because that was a fear too. Like, oh, everybody's like, oh, take a boat, take this, take that. But like, anytime you go from one country to another, you got exposed to a whole nother, you know, group of laws, a whole nother batch of laws and policies and so on and so forth.
All new government procedures.
I'm in a comfortable place. I'm being fed well. I'm safe from the coronavirus. Yeah, I'm out of touch. Yeah, it's costing me money, but I'm not going to throw myself out of this and throw myself into, you know, out of the frying pan and into the fire by making the... So anyway, then the buses stopped running. The only way to get there was to pay the guides to drive us and put them at risk to drive us to Buenos Aires. But then one of the other ranches guys did that and they got in trouble. And they said that the trip took them 16 hours with the roadblocks and stuff, or with the checkpoints. And I'm like, oh crap. So anyway, a lot of crap goes on. A lot of jockeying back and forth goes on. And at this point we just don't know. We don't know what's going on. We're sitting there and I'm like at the darkest moment of of the trip, just sitting there. I didn't go out that morning. You know, I had been going out just, you know, keep myself busy, keep my brain busy pretty much every morning, and then coming back and not going out in the evening at this point anymore.
Right.
So I'm sitting there and I'm just like down on my luck. And one of the guides gets a radio call from Franco, which is the guy that I had been hunting with.
Sure.
And tells Horacio, tell John to grab his bow, put his gear on and drive him out to me where I'm at here now.
Oh,
so I'm getting in there. They find my stag, or the one that I had the through and through on.
Oh, wow.
He's bedded, arrow's still in him, right? He's bedded underneath the tree and the arrow's still in him. I'm like, holy shit. That's freaking crazy. So anyway, get out there. Long story short, I end up killing that stag. So now I got my stag. I'm feeling good. Guys bring out some beers and we're kind of celebrating, enjoying the one victory that we've had.
the first victory you've had in days. Right.
Right. So I'm like, awesome, man. I got, you know, it came at the right time, because it gave me a new lease on the situation. It gave me a new lease on life. I was like, really, like, I was in a low spot, because I felt like kind of responsible for everybody, because I'm the one that planned the trip.
Yeah.
You know, and I could see my, like, one of my best friends, Charles, he's like practically losing his business back home, you know, going through all the same stuff I am, but I'm just feeling like it's my fault, you know?
Right.
You know, my kids, all this stuff. And I'm just like, so that happened. And I was like, oh, great. You know, at least that one good thing happened, right?
You got some happiness in here.
Exactly. So that afternoon or that evening, I get a text message or a message on Facebook. And I forgive me, because now his name eludes me. It's not somebody that I'm like close friends with. It's just somebody that I'm Facebook buddies with.
Right.
And he sends me this thing, hey, check into Eastern Airlines. They're doing a bunch of rescue flights. They're calling them rescue flights, but they're charter flights.
Right.
Out of South America. Well, I check with them. There's not one for Buenos Aires at this point, but I call the embassy and I say, yeah, check into this, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, 2 days later, I get an email back from the guy I had been dealing with at the embassy, and the embassy got Eastern Airlines to charter a flight from Buenos Aires.
That's awesome.
To Miami.
That's awesome.
Right. And so all the whole time too, like, everybody has their opinion. I'm getting all this, like, I'm getting some backlash. I'm getting, you know, because I already now we started the GoFundMe. It was going for 2 days at this point. People are assholes.
Yeah,
you know,
people can be.
You know, and I have a feeling I know one of the assholes who it was, but I won't get into that. But you know, it's
yeah, John, you're in the public eye. It, haters going to hate. They're going to find a way to hate no matter what.
Whatever. You know, like, the thing is, like, if it were me on the other end, if I was, like, if it, I try to help everybody out. And that's what sure. It was kind of like. I was, you know what? I'm going to talk about the positive. Fuck the negative.
Yeah.
The positive side, there were so many people that reached out, so many sure. people that helped out, so many people that were willing to take time and try to help us figure out. One of the dads here, I mean, Tony spent a bunch of time trying to help me get a private flight for as inexpensive as possible. There was another right. gentleman by the name of Tony as well, who is, we know from my daughter's school, you know, and I chaperoned with him at one of the kids' school trips and stuff. And, you know, so not a close friend of mine, just somebody I hardly know, you know, and he spent so much time, man. Like, I can't even tell you how many people, like people that reached out that I hadn't talked to him forever. Like, I went to school with Katie Rommel High School. She helped out. My friend Nadine, how I went to high school, I haven't seen in 15 years, you know, put me in touch with people. Like, you know, the people that I've talked to all the time are close to, I kind of expected that from, but all these people that I hadn't been.
People just crawling out of the woodwork to help.
You know, and my wife said something really nice to me. Like, she's like, I was going to cry saying it, but she's like, that's because you touched all these people. You know, you've sure. done things for them. You've, you know, that's why they're willing to do this shit for you.
And it's strange how you'll get communication, how it just filters down. I mean, I got a message from Dan Turley talking about, you know, his son coming home from Mormon mission early. Uh-huh. And the next thing you know, I'm hearing about, you know, the Mormon church out of Utah, obviously, setting up all these travel arrangements to bring missionaries home from all over the planet. And that he had friends in, or his son had friends in South America. And that's the thing I know, I'm on the phone with the Mormon church and church of, you know, Latter-day Saints in South America saying, hey, I got a buddy stuck down in Argentina that maybe he can hitchhike a ride home. I'm on the phone for an hour and a half trying to communicate with somebody over there. And they send a message from you saying, hey, we got a flight. We're good. I'm like, okay, I'm going to hang with these guys.
Yeah.
So it's just funny how the communication lines opened up. And the opportunity
it was really touching to see how many people came together to try to help us get home.
Sure.
So now even
if they couldn't help financially.
Right. Yeah. And I didn't like, listen, man, you know, I've bounced back from some serious financial shit in my life.
Sure.
I'm a phoenix. I've been reborn from the ashes plenty of times. So if I had to do it, I was going to do it. And I would have figured out a way, one way. If my kids had to eat ramen for a couple months, whatever, we would have made it happen.
Right.
But, you know, if it meant I had to go back out and push in a pole, I would have did it. But
sure.
Like that side of it, like, yeah, it was a concern. And yes, I don't want to do it. Yes, I don't want to have to. But I knew that I would survive, that we would survive. I just wanted to get home. I just wanted to get home to my kids. I wanted to get home and stop the bleeding with the business and this and that. And luckily, I mean, I had Dominic, he's my best friend. And, you know, he's more of a brother to me than anything over here running my business. But I had him up, but he's got another job, you know, like
right.
I couldn't continue to keep relying on him. You know, we were getting estimates that we were going to be stuck there till June 1st.
That's just crazy.
But that was just not going to happen. June 1st, that would ruin me. 100% ruin me. It would have ruined Charles. Would have ruined Paul. You know, Paul only makes money when he's seeing patients himself. It's not like he, you know, so it's like, yeah, I think this was like the 22nd. Yeah, it was the 22nd. And we finally got this Eastern Airlines thing booked. We were the first people to book it. We booked it as first class. They had this like menu on there. It was, you know, $100 more to have first class. And your baggage was paid for. It's like, I didn't understand. Like, why would anybody not do first class?
For only
it costs you 50. You have to pay $60 for a second bag anywhere. So sure. For $40 more, I'm going to have first class. So we booked first class. We picked our seats. We're like, oh, there was finally a sense of relief. Right.
Right.
But the only problem is that flight left on the 26th and we were not allowed to, it was left on the morning of the 26th. And we were not allowed to leave till X time on the 25th. Right. I thought it was the 24th the whole time, but it was the 25th.
Doesn't give you a lot of time to get to Buenos Aires.
Right. And we keep getting, you know, we were already told now it's taking 16 hours, there's checkpoints, blah, blah, blah. so on and so forth. We still haven't got our walking papers yet. We don't have any paperwork that says that we can leave. The doc, we're supposed to get a doctor's note, all this shit. I wasn't supposed to talk about this, but we had a grease palms. There was a lot of shit that went on behind the scenes. Nico was instrumental in a lot of it. Thank God he was so well connected. But so all that stuff went on. And then so we end up having to charter a private jet or a private plane. It was a dual prop, turboprop.
Commuter plane type.
Commuter plane. Yeah. From Santa Rosa to Buenos Aires so that we would get there with enough time to catch this flight. Right. So we go through all that.
And that wasn't a cheap flight.
No, it was like 10 grand.
Jesus.
You know, it wasn't cheap for an hour and a half flight.
That's crazy.
And plus, we had to pay people at the airport. We had to pay this, whatever, because the airport wasn't open. So they had to move things around to get permission. And, you know, one thing after another, I don't even remember because I honestly stopped keeping count.
At that point in time, it's just dollar bills. It's just.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
you're just printing money anyhow.
You put yourself in that position. Money doesn't matter. Right. You just start whatever. Anyway, so we get all that set up. So now we know we're leaving, you know, whatever time we were leaving, 10 a.m. on the 25th, we're leaving, go catch this flight. We're going to be in Buenos Aires. We have a private transfer, you know, that's following protocol, whatever, from the private airfield in Buenos Aires to the Sheraton Hotel, which is taking Americans only. And they basically have the whole hotel shut down and they're giving like wings and floors.
Wow.
So we had our own wing and our own floor in this wing was just our group of seven, you know, just to not be in contact with, you know, Corona.
Sure.
So we get there. They bring us over to the hotel. Basically, we're supposed to just go to the hotel, sleep there for a couple of hours, get up at like 4 o'clock the next morning and head to the airport with the same transfer company. Well, we get there and the flight's canceled. And I'm like, what the fuck? I said,
I'm freaking out.
Now I'm in a big city where we could potentially get coronavirus if we leave our little, we're stuck in a hotel room.
Right.
And yeah, like, I'm just like, we just spent all this money to get here.
And this is the flight that the embassy set up for you.
Yeah. Right.
That's crazy. This is
the flight that embassy set up. So now I don't know if a couple of people were talking about, you know, Brandon McDermott, whatever, he got a rescue flight and this is and that. Well, his flight was canceled a long time ago. If it wasn't for me, he wouldn't even known about the Eastern Airlines thing. I got him on the same flight as us. Wow. But like, that's what was, it was hurting me because there was so many people getting these like information on this side. Cause sure. Now I'm starting to deal with like politics about why I'm bitching and whining, you know, like whatever. Anyway,
you ended up spending next to 3 days in that hotel then, right?
We had to spend two days in that hotel. We finally go to the airport. Oh, wait, you know, I'm missing a very very important part of the trip, a positive part. Okay.
Cool. Bring it.
So now it's the 23rd. We're all excited. We're finally getting out of here in 2 days, but we still don't have our papers. We still don't have it. So we're still stressed out. Well, almost the exact same scenario that I had 2 days before, get a radio call. I had shot a fox that morning. I went out that morning. I got a radio call like at noon from Franco and Gonzalo went to walk out on the property.
Right.
And they found my original stag. I shot in the shoulder.
Holy cow. Still alive or dead?
Still alive.
Wow.
Still alive. Giant hole with a bunch of maggots in it and everything. Dude, he was gonna die from sepsis or something, but
right.
He bedded underneath the thing. It's like they're like, yeah, we could see the hole, blah blah blah. You know, we know it's him. They looked at the video from when I shot and everything too, so it was like, yeah, they knew it was him. So I go out there and I'm crawling into position and I tell Gonzalo, I say, here, stay over here, you hold on to the rifle. I'm gonna try to shoot him with the bow. Sneak into position. And I'm 30 yards from him.
Oh, wow.
But all I can see is his head and he's facing away. And then he turns his head and he looks at me in my direction and he kind of lifts his head up. And I got that throat patch spot and I'm at full draw and I'm going to shoot him in the throat patch. And I'm like, man, I don't know why I didn't, but I didn't. So I let down. And as soon as I let down, he jumps up and he runs. So I quickly drew back again. And as he's running, and I guess I'm at like 55 yards at this point, I shoot one running, hit him in the like quartering, probably it was like hind quarter, mostly hind quarter, but like It went into him, and Gonzalo, I heard the gun go off, boom, boom, shot him, and he dropped him. So I got three stags.
We're not going to let that son of a bitch go. I said Gonzalo wasn't going to let that son of a bitch
go. No, hell no. And I told him, I said, you shoot that motherfucker if he starts running.
Exactly.
Oh, man. So anyway, so I got three stags.
Wow. Did Maria shoot one too?
Yeah, Maria shot one as well.
Jeez.
Yep. Yep.
It's definitely going to be a stag party at your house.
Oh my God. I have four stags in my house. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do with them.
That's awesome.
But so yeah, I didn't even tell Maria's story. Hers was textbook. Everything went down perfect on it. And, you know, she shot it with the rifle, but we snuck to 70 yards. She still wanted to kill it somewhat bow range.
Yeah.
Anyway, but so now I'm going back to what we were saying. So we get to Buenos Aires. We have to stay there 2 days. We get to the airport at 4:30 the next morning, and Eastern Airlines never operated out of this. So they have no personnel there. They hired four gate crew, basically, that don't really know what they're doing.
Sure.
They're handwriting us tickets. You know what? Let me back up. Okay. So when the flight gets canceled, we lose our seats. Okay. So I'm on the phone for 2.5 hours with Eastern Airlines that evening, trying to get our seat assignment back. Cause I at least wanted the whole reason why I wanted to be, up front and all that stuff is I wanted to mitigate the chances of getting coronavirus. You know, I'm going to be on a freaking big ass plane with all these people that have been where I have no clue. You know, I want to be the front of the plane. You know, there's only four rows up there in the front.
Sure.
So less people, and it's closed off. Like, you know, whatever.
Otherwise, you're in a sardine can breathing everybody else's exhaust for 9 hours.
Exactly. So 4 hours on the phone. I finally get our seat assignments back. She sends me over confirmation email, da 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 da. And now we're in the airport. We're waiting online for four and a half hours. I think we were online before we actually got to the ticket agent. Ticket agent spent about 45 minutes, gives us our seats. And then right before we leave, tells us we have to give our seats back because the other ticket agent gave away our seats to somebody else.
Oh, God.
So now my wife and Jen, Paul's wife, are sitting up front. Luckily, we had two up front. Paul and I are sitting in row 30. Jillian and Charles are not sitting next to each other, but they're sitting in row 29. And JJ, which is the other guy that was there with us, he was one row ahead of me and Paul in the middle. Like, and we're just packed in there. And the whole time I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, fuck me, I'm going to get freaking coronavirus. One of us is going to get coronavirus.
We're all going to get sick.
It's going to happen. We're fucked. Now the fear of coronavirus is setting in, you know? Like I'm worried about it. We get through the line. Before we get on the plane, they group us together by boarding group or by not really a boarding group, but by row. And we're like packed into this little corner, but we're all like shoulder to shoulder. Like, I mean, the complete opposite of social distancing.
Yeah. You know? We're social closing.
Yeah. It's so funny because the line going to the ticket agent, they literally wrapped us around. They made us stay 6 feet apart all the way around. And then they grouped us all together. Like we stood there in front of the gate for another 2.5 hours.
Oh my God.
So mind you, I just paid for a flight from Miami because we're flying from Buenos to Miami, from Miami to Phoenix, right? Now I know for sure. And I told my wife, I'm like, listen, make sure that flight, we have at least 4 or 5 hours in between, right? Because you know this flight's not going to be on time.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we didn't get to Miami until half an hour after my flight left. So now we have to spend the night in Miami and the whole next day because the only other flight leaving out doesn't leave till 9 p.m. the next night.
Jeez.
Yeah, like, oh, man. And Miami is like one of the epicenters of where coronavirus is, right?
Oh, yeah, you got all the Miami kids down there for spring break spreading it around. It was, yeah.
And I'm just freaking the fuck out, man. We're staying at a hotel that's in the airport. So like we're literally in the same terminal that we're going to be leaving out of. So we basically confined ourselves to a room for 26 hours or something like that. And every step
along the way, nothing went perfectly right.
Yeah. We finally, everybody's like, oh, aren't you happy that you're in the United States? And I'm like, no, man, I'm not, I'm not happy yet. I'll be happy when I'm home and I'm home for 10 days and I know I don't have freaking coronavirus. Exactly. And I can feel comfortable about hugging my children.
And you did quarantine yourselves.
Yeah, I did.
When did your kids finally get to you?
Well, see, that was the thing, because I quarantined myself from everybody but my children, which was stupid, in my opinion. But this was kind of an argument I had with my wife. I'm like, listen, we should go home and we should at least spend 4 or 5 days, you know, just kind of see what's going on before we go. And she's like, I can't do it. I can't be away from the kids anymore. I'm like, you're going to be really mad if we give our kids coronavirus.
Yeah, well, I mean, but in her defense, I mean, it was supposed to be, what, a 10-day vacation turned into 20-something?
21 days. Yeah. But so we got home. My dad was here to pick us up, and he's wearing a mask and gloves and everything, and, you know, and like
your biohazard suit in the car.
Yeah, you know, it was like I couldn't even hug my dad. Hello, I couldn't, you know, like we got home and the kids wanted to like run up and I'm like, listen, we're gonna go take a shower. We're gonna burn these clothes. Then and then we did that. So we finally got to like say hello to the kids and whatever. And it's just, you know, and then now I've been doing what everybody else is doing, picking up the pieces and trying to adapt to this new life that we call.
Yeah, this new 2020 normal.
I mean, there were so many other little things that went down that just added to the frustration. Like,
oh, I'm sure.
But it's just, we'd be on this podcast for 3 hours if I try to give you a detailed, you know, rundown of it. You know, all in all, that the money that people sent on the GoFundMe helped out tremendously, because cost us about 55 grand, 54 grand. I don't even know exactly, but you know. Just the traveling.
That's just your travel. We're not talking about your hunts. Yeah, we're not talking about your hunts. We're not talking about the animals you killed. We're not talking about your time on the ranch.
Luckily for me, now this wasn't the case for Charles or Paul or that guy JJ. I already had paid for all my stuff. Gotcha. A couple years in advance, so like it wasn't hurting me, because you know I wasn't taking away as much for me altogether. Right. You know, but. So, but, yeah, man, it was an experience. The hunting was amazing. I really, like, if I look back at all the good points about the trip, the food was amazing. Like, it's someplace that I would definitely want to do again when there's no coronavirus going on.
That was going to be my next question. Are you turned off, or, cause that's your first international hunt, right?
What's that?
Was that your first international hunt?
I mean, yeah, if you don't consider Mexico or Canada, yes.
Yeah. So this is actually flying down, taking your bow on a plane, international, kind of like my Australia trip in June, first international hunt. But you're not soured. You'd do it again.
Oh yeah, I would do it again. I'm definitely gonna. Well, you know, now I solidified, because I spent so much time and I got to learn the inner workings of that. I solidified the whole, you know, being an agent for Nico down there. That, because I spent so much time hunting there and learning the ranches and animals, and so much, like, they were pretty impressed with how well me and Charles
knew our stuff
and how we hunted. And sure. So I might actually guide down there. We'll see, you know, because we don't really have anything cooking over here in March for Arizona hunting. And
not really a little,
I'm not much of a turkey hunter. So
turkey hunting or a little spring bear hunt, if you can find them.
Yeah.
So,
and even that's not really till May though. Right.
Well, it's going on now.
Oh yeah, I'm thinking over the counter.
Yeah, you're thinking, yeah.
I don't know if you could probably hear that. My children just got home.
No, that's cool.
So yeah, that's in a nutshell. Without, like I said, without getting into all the little nitty gritty thing, there were so many little things, so many little frustrations. It was just like constantly, like having the rug pulled out from underneath you constantly. Like
every time you turn around, just another roadblock.
Yeah, exactly. You know. So
we're glad you got home safe. We're glad nobody's sick. And nobody's sick, right?
No, yeah, everybody's good.
Everybody's good, and that's good to hear. That's awesome. Yeah. And your kids?
Yeah, they're all good. Driving us freaking insane right now. I'm ready to go back to quarantine in Argentina.
Yeah, everybody's got cabin fever right now. I took a little time to get away from the house to record this with you, and I'm headed back to the house to be stuck inside. So
yeah, for sure.
Well, cool.
All right, man. Well,
appreciate the conversation. Good to hear you. Good to have you home. And once this is all said and done, we'll get together for some beers and talk red stags some more.
Yeah, absolutely. So, hopefully this corona thing will all be in the rear view pretty soon.
God, I hope so.
All right, buddy. Well, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks again. And thanks for everything you did while we were down there. I appreciate it.
Only wish I could have done more, man.
All right. Take it easy.
Yep.